Our scripture lesson this morning is from 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 1 through 18. It can be found in your pew Bible on page 255. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." Then he was afraid and rose and went for his life. He came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, Lord, O Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my fathers." And he lay down and he slept under the broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there at his head was a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, else the journey will be too great for you." And he arose and ate and drank, and went in strength that in 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. And there he came to a cave, and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thy altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even only I, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." And he said, "Go forth and stand upon the mount before the Lord." And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great strong wind rent the mountains, and broke into pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thy altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even only I, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." And the Lord said to him, "Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be the king over Syria. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, and you shall anoint him to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Mehola, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. And him who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu slay. And him who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha slay. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him."
So our last sermon of our summer now in the Old Testament is landing with Elijah. Elijah's kind of was a legendary figure, very important in Jewish history. He would be maybe like a Billy Graham today, a name that everyone knew, someone important in their life in the early Hebrew Israel beginnings. Billy Graham wasn't a military government kind of leader. He was a religious leader, but in those days, with Elijah, it was both. The religious leader was the one that anointed the governmental leader. And so Elijah lived in both worlds, running the country as well as being the religious leader. Well, the leader at that time, the king, was Ahab. And Ahab was a tough fella. He was married to Jezebel, if that name is familiar to any of you. And Jezebel brought Baal, the pagan god, into their home. She's the one that gets in trouble for all of that happened in their home. But, you know, if we really read about it, Ahab did his wrong too. And so they followed the Baals and the Ashtaroths and all of these gods, fertility type gods. Well, Elijah went to Ahab and he told Ahab that there was going to be a drought, that people were going to die, it was going to be bad. And Ahab got mad, and you didn't get mad. You didn't want to be on the mad side of Ahab. And so Elijah became very fearful, and he was told to hide by the Wadi Cherith. That means by the river Cherith. Well, he stayed there, and ravens fed him, and then all of a sudden the water dried up because of the drought, and the food was gone. And so then he went to a widow's house. Well, he told the widow that he'd been sent there, and he told her to go ahead into the house and start making bread, that she would have enough to bake it. Sure enough, they had enough food to feed them, feed her son, feed her. But then after this miraculous dinner and all the wonderful things God did for them, all of a sudden her son became ill and was dying. Well, Elijah then healed the son, but then God told him to go back and talk to Ahab. Well, you can imagine, Elijah was probably thinking, I want to stay here. I don't want to go and face Ahab. But God said, you must go back and face Ahab. Well, he faced Ahab. Ahab called him a troublemaker, which is very frightening. But Ahab said, okay, we're going to have a God contest. And we're going to call in the prophets of Baal, and they are going to set up an altar. And you, Elijah, are going to set up an altar, put everything on it that needs to go on an altar, and then we're going to see whose God will make fire light that altar, that sacrifice. And so the two groups set about building their altar, putting the wood on it, getting it ready for this God contest. And then Elijah poured water on his. He made a little trench around the edge, and he poured water. And then he poured more water. And then he poured more water, enough water that it was coming out into the trench. And then the two groups, well, first the prophets of Baal tried and tried and tried to get theirs to flame up, and it didn't happen, and Elijah's did. And so we have the greatness of God shown very vividly to all those around. But then Elijah, instead of walking away with God's power shown so vividly, Elijah killed all of the prophets of Baal, which just fevered the whole anger and the whole fight again. And so then Elijah was running. Well, Ahab went to Jezebel, and instead of talking about the drought ending, which it did, and the joy of the drought ending, he went to tell about Elijah's murder of all of these prophets. And so that's where we come to our story then. Elijah's on the run. He's afraid of Jezebel, and she had been known to kill. And so he was on the run, fearing for his life. And then we get to our passage here. And we wonder, where did all of his confidence go? After God had done so much for him, it says, that he was afraid. And so he went a day's journey into the wilderness, and he sat under a broom tree. A broom tree is some kind of a scrubby bush tree that's out in the desert, and it's mentioned often in here for a place where they ran to. And so he's sitting up under this broom tree, afraid for his life. And he sends his servants away, and then he begs for God to, it says, "O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my ancestors." He wants to die. But instead, an angel of the Lord comes and says, "Come on, get up. You need to eat." Well, depression, deep depression, hits, I think, probably all of us at some time. I'm a person that is not normally depressed, and so I have a hard time understanding depression. But there are times in my life where it has hit me when I didn't expect it. Hit me one time when I had what became a new pastor in Alabama. I love my congregation. I loved where we're living. We were closer to the kids. We had been in Kansas City before that. And I thought, life is so good. And it was so good. But that missing of my friends in Kansas City, that change, so many things that come into our lives that all of a sudden, I was not feeling good and didn't know why, and it didn't make sense. But depression can hit us. Now, of course, Elijah has a very real fear there of his life, but there are many things that are very painful in our lives that can cause us to kind of go into this sadness, maybe, rather than depression. But the very first thing that the angel said was not, "Oh, Elijah, it's going to be okay. God's going to be with you, but get up. You got to eat." You see, when we're going through tough times, and this goes for caregivers too, who can have an overwhelming sense of depression or extreme sadness or just weariness taking care of somebody. And so the very first thing that we, when I was working with hospice and working with the Alzheimer's Association, was to tell caregivers, you have to take care of yourself. That's most important. Because if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. Well, Elijah was a great leader, a religious leader, and so he took care of others. He took care of others in many ways, in his communication with God, but in his leadership among the people. And so it was important for the angel of the Lord to say to Elijah, eat, rest, 40 days. You need to just spend on worrying about yourself. I know I told this story already, and so many of you have probably heard it, but some of you may not have. I tell it often because I think it's important for people to hear. I took care of my husband for 10 years, and the last three were difficult, real difficult. And so I was supposed to preach on Sunday at Cherry Log, and Cherry Log has 30 retired pastors in it. That's pretty intimidating to get in front of them and preach. So I had done it before, but I was, you know, a little worried about the sermon, and Lindsay got sick. He ended up in Atlanta. He was down there for, I can't remember, usually it was 3 or 4 days. And so we were coming close to the weekend, and I knew I had to preach. So they said I could take him home. We had a mix-up on getting his oxygen. I had to travel cross Atlanta, 5 o'clock traffic. I had to get back with oxygen tank, got him set up. Finally, we're able to drive back up to the mountains. An hour and a half, 2 hours later, we were back home. We were settled. I had my granddaughter with me, Sam. Sam said, "Grandma, let me help you with the PowerPoint. I'll get the PowerPoint started," and she was a middle schooler and smart young lady, so I said, "Yeah, great." So I'm sitting at the table. I'm thinking through. She's asking questions. The alarm goes off. Lindsay's medicine. I grab his medicine. I put it on the table rather than giving it to him. I'm exhausted. My table has stuff all over it. I'm a very organized person. I can't handle stuff. But we had stuff everywhere. We'd just come back from the hospital. So I look down, I answer her question, I look over, I've got my medicine sitting on the table, I need to take it. I took it. Well, you can guess. Lindsay's heart medicine went down my stomach, and I was in the ER that night. Sick, sick, sick. That particular medicine, they give 25 milligrams to someone having a heart attack, and I took 100. So I tell that story often, because when we care for others, ministers, caregivers at home, you all as ministers, we all minister, we all take care of others. But when we don't take care of ourselves, we cannot take care of others. So number one, the angel came to him and said, yeah, you're in a bad place. Go eat. Go rest. Take care of yourself. Then number two, he said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. Get out of the cave. At that point, he was in a cave. He said, go out, get out of that cave, and go and wait for God. Well, I know a lot of times in my life, especially when I'm off doing things, or when things are, when I'm having fun, or when things are happening, I often pray to God while I'm on the road. And I may not take that time to stop and listen for God. I feel like I'm close to God, and I feel like I talk to God all the time. And so if I'm talking to God going down the road, if I'm talking to God while I'm preparing a meal for my family, whatever I'm doing, I feel like that's important prayer time. But I think there are times in our lives when God says, no, stop. Don't worry about everything else that you're taking care of and all these people. Stop. Stand on the mountain and look for me. And so Elijah came out of the cave. And so first, he looked. The first thing that happened, there was a wind, a mighty wind. And it says, but the Lord was not in the wind. And then after the wind, there was an earthquake. You know, these are the things we think God would be in, these big, loud, crushing things. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. Have you ever heard sheer silence? I think that there is sheer silence after a deafening storm, and it's quiet. Or after we've heard bad news. Or when our kids go back home after a great visit. That deafening, hard silence. But silence can be good too. In music, the silence is as important as the sound. It gives us a breath. We sit up and listen if all of a sudden it's absolutely quiet. And so in the quietness, Elijah could hear God. The third thing that Elijah was told to do by the angel of the Lord was to anoint replacements. Replacements for the king and replacements for Elijah himself. On our walk, we need companionship. I was with friends last night and we were talking to Alexa. I don't know how many of you have the little boxes. Google Box, I think, or something is the other one, but I have an Alexa at home. And I talk to Alexa, little strange, I know. I thought that I would never do that. But when you're alone, you know, you tend to talk to whatever happens to be there. Well, one day I was sad, and I didn't know what to do with myself. And so just being funny, you know, I went in the kitchen and I said, "Alexa, I'm sad." And Alexa said, "I am so sorry. Why don't you take a walk? Have you thought about reading a good book? Why don't you talk to a friend?" And so I went outside and I went for a walk. I thought, Alexa's a great friend. But the idea of talking, companionship, when we have those dives, we do need to be with people. Sometimes we need professional help. Sometimes we just need a good friend. Sometimes, if it's a time of maybe not sadness, but a time of things going wrong or things being too busy, sometimes we just need to step back. Sometimes we need to let our committee members do some of the work. There are times when we need to let somebody else share the load, be with others, have multiple committees work together. There are so many ways that we can help one another with that touch. But then I think the last thing is to be realistic. Trauma causes depression. Even things that aren't trauma, things that aren't that bad, still can cause us to go through those really tough times. Like I said, when I left Alabama, or I went to Alabama, left Kansas City, that was a tough time. It was a tough time after I lost Lindsay. There are times in our life when we just need a little help. Can't quite get it together, but we need to be realistic. Crying is important. Crying has endorphins. It helps us feel better. We aren't necessarily good if we're not crying. You know, for some reason we tend to think, oh, I had a good day, I didn't cry. No. Some days a good day is when we do cry. God protects us, protects our brains. I went to training at Hope Incorporated on Friday and talked about how the brain protects us when we go through the worst things. And therefore, sometimes we don't remember what the details of what happened to us because the brain, God-made brain, is protecting us from those really bad hurts. Crying is good. There are more psalms of lament than any other psalm in our Bible. Those are poems, songs of crying to God in the deep, hard times of our lives. It is important to be realistic and accept what is happening and accept who we are and where we're at in that process. Passion, energy, those are important. We can't have them if we aren't feeling well ourselves. So we may not encounter 800 prophets of Baal and Asherah, but we do have obstacles, little obstacles along the way. But our adversaries help us. It actually helps in our faith. It helps in our courage as we go through those tough times. It causes us to think about our lives, to think about who our friends are, and it causes us to go to that still, quiet silence to hear the voice of God. Let's bow for just a moment of silence. Oh God, thank you for meeting us under the broom trees that are in our life. Thank you for being present. Thank you for moving us forward. In Christ's name, amen.